This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world, and a Merry Christmas to you. This is podcast is dropping on Christmas Eve, so Merry Christmas to you, those of you who are listening to it before Christmas. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nered. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris, how are things in Maine today?
It's actually a beautiful day in Maine today, and quiet too, just the way I like it.
Yeah, I bet Maine in December, pretty quiet. It can be, anyway. So Chris, of course, writes for Ford Authority, Forbes, Driving Today, among others. And Christmas preparations all done? You're ready to go here?
We are. The tree is stocked, and the stockings are up, and we are ready to go.
Stockings are stung. No, stockings are hung by the chimney with care, exactly. As they say, so that's good.
How about you?
Pretty, you know, it's going along. My wife does all the heavy lifting on Christmas, and I have my children in. Some are from out of state, and they are in town, I guess, nominally quarantining with us as we go through what we're going through here. And so that's very festive. We had been empty nesters for a little bit there, and now our three daughters are back. So that's kind of cool, and we're set for that.
Great.
This week we have two special guests. Lev Peeker is the CEO of CarParts.com. He was named Executive of the Year winner in the Big Awards for business. We'll ask him about that, or maybe we won't, but he is a big name exec, and he's going to tell us how he's turned his company around and what CarParts.com has to offer to folks like us out in the hinterlands. We'll also hear from Laura Thornton of OnStar. She is going to reveal how to track a very special someone this Christmas. So listen up, you know, moms and dads, this is, might be interesting to you, this thing from OnStar. When we have Laura Thornton on board. In the car review segment, Chris will give us his opinion on the 2021 Land Rover Defender. And I will tell you about my recent drive in the first SUV from luxury brand Genesis, the GV80. So before we do any of that, though, let's dive into the automotive news from around the world. What do you have top of mind for us, Chris?
I have an interesting story about a smartphone company actually getting into the car business, or at least allegedly getting into the car business. Apple has, for many years now, probably five or six, been toying with the idea of producing its own vehicle. And at some point around 2018 or 19, I think things kind of slowed down and people felt like that wasn't going to happen. But now they're coming back out and saying, you know, yes, we're going to try to build a car, or at least that's the report. So they have what they're saying is a breakthrough battery technology. We have no idea, obviously, what the car will look like, but it will have some degree of autonomous or self-driving capabilities, you know, lower level type stuff, probably, if I had to guess, something similar to like Cadillac Super Cruise. But a really interesting story. You know, I think that a lot of people have strong feelings about Apple one way or the other, but it's, I think more choice in the EV space is better for consumers.
Absolutely true. I mean, the rumors were really hot about an Apple car 5 years ago, and then they essentially just dropped off the radar, and you didn't hear anything. Of course, Apple is very close-mouthed about future product, and rightly so. It kind of makes sense for a tech company to do that. Now, apparently, whether this is a leaked story and they want people to know about this now, or somebody went off the reservation and started talking about this, it sounds as if they are ready to actually build and brand cars. Maybe it's an iCar. I don't know. You know, coming up. And that's a big stretch. And it's a big stretch to go from a company that essentially designs and markets but does not manufacture its own products to a company. Maybe they'll do the same with cars, but at the same time, you have to have some kind of manufacturing arm to do that. Likely, that would be in China, wouldn't it? I mean, isn't that what we might expect out of Apple, given the fact that that's where Apple builds most of its current products? That seems a logical jump.
I think they're diversifying. They're working, I think, to diversify their supply chain and their production locations in India and other places, but this goal, they've allegedly, I keep saying that word, but supposedly set of, you know, kicking these cars out by 2024. That's quite aggressive for a company that has never built one. So we'll have to see, you know, what they can do with that time frame.
Well, having worked at a startup years and years ago, it's really close time frame just to get dealers in line to sell vehicles in 2024. I mean, that's not that far away. They better, you know, be stepping on the gas to do that, among other things, unless they're going to come to market in a wholly different way. Maybe they'll follow the Tesla example and do storefronts and sell online. Who knows? Really interesting stuff coming out of Apple after, like we say, about 5 years of being really quiet on that front. So there you go. Well, the North American Car of the Year finalists have been announced. I am on the jury that judges the North American Car, the North American Truck, and the North American Utility Vehicle of the Year. And so I'll dive right into what the finalists are. There were some surprises to me as a juror, so maybe others will be surprised too. For Car of the Year, there are three finalists: the Genesis G80, the Hyundai Elantra, that whole family of Elantras that is new this year, and the Nissan Sentra. So there are two very popularly priced vehicles, and then a luxury vehicle, a luxury sedan. For Truck of the Year, there is the Ford F-150, which is all new for 2021. All new, but very, very similar to 2020 in a lot of ways, new in many others. There's the Jeep Gladiator Mojave, and the Ram 1500 TRX, that super truck with over 700 horsepower. So you have a whole line of trucks in the Ford F-150 against individual models, and we'll see how that pans out. In the Utility Vehicle of the Year competition, we have a vehicle I think I profiled last week on the show, and that is the Ford Mustang Mach-E. Another Genesis product, they're romping. They and Ford Motor Company are doing well on these awards. The GV80 is their midsize luxury SUV, and we'll be talking about that as our vehicle coming up in the road test segment. And then the Land Rover Defender. Geez, another vehicle that we're going to be talking about. So we're really on top of things here, more than we know, as a matter of fact. What was interesting to me, as much as these vehicles that were included among the finalist lists, are the vehicles that are not, including the Polestar 2, the Volvo electric vehicle, the Ford Bronco Sport, and of course, then there is probably your favorite car of the year. I'm just guessing at this, Chris, but I'm thinking it's probably the case, is the all-new Toyota Venza.
Well, I haven't driven one yet, but I will say that I agree with, you know, most of your choices. Some of those cars are just great, and, you know, Genesis, for what it is has come a long way, and they are putting out some cars with incredible value, great style and tech. And I love that you guys added the Nissan Sentra in there. I think the value is really a really compelling car for the value you get with it.
Yeah, I like that inclusion as well. And I was somewhat afraid that there are 50 jurors. They're all independent from the United States and Canada. They represent a variety of magazines, newspapers, websites, television and radio shows, even podcasts like ours. And so they have a tendency to go their own ways, which I think is great. I think there's a lot to be said for this diversity and the knowledge base that those 50 bring to the party. The final voting will take place January 2nd to 4th. And then the North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year winners will be announced on January 11th. I'll be participating in that program in Detroit area. So that's coming up.
Great.
Volvo has also announced a new EV, or if not announced, they've certainly talked to Automotive News about it, and that's, which is as good as announcing it, I guess, because it's going to get out there. Their upcoming EV will be, they say, not a successor to the V40, their little station wagon, but be a more of a premium vehicle, but be based on the same platform that is also supporting the XC40 Recharge and the Polestar 2 that we just talked about. And it supposedly, this according to Håkan Samuelsson, who is the Volvo CEO, will have a more streamlined body. It'll be sleeker looking than the XC40 Recharge. To me, that sounds like a Polestar 2. But who am I to to judge on that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, they have some, first of all, the XC40 Recharge, I love the normal XC40, but I think that the Recharge has, you know, a 208 mile battery only range. I think that, you know, for a lot of people, that just isn't going to cut it. And if they can do a little bit better with this new car, a new vehicle, then I think that they probably have a winner. But, you know, they're pushing towards that fully electrified model range. So, you know, it's another step in the on the way there.
Yeah, an interesting thing, as you're an electric vehicle manufacturer, you have to work out range. Same for a plug-in hybrid, for that matter, although it'll be a smaller range. But you have to work out range versus cost, and you know what is the sweet spot. And I would venture to guess that the sweet spot in Europe is a smaller range than it is here in the United States or here in North America. I think it's just likely, but things are closer, right? I mean, it's a more confined area. So it strikes me that they're kind of splitting the difference or figuring out what's best for the largest markets they're going to serve. And because if you add range, you're adding significant cost. And going back to our original story here, I mean, one of the things that Apple at least is rumored to be promising is a battery breakthrough that is going to really lower the cost of the batteries. And that's a game changer. That would be a giant game changer were that to happen.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that we talked about this the last time, but, you know, one thing that Volvo did with the XC40 is, you know, this fast charge capability, you know, from 0 to 80% and under an hour. And I think that's great. But, you know, you can have 1,000 miles of range, but if it takes a day to charge it, then that's useless to everyone. But like you said, I think it was last week or the week before, people who own these cars kind of build their lifestyle around it. So they plan to go to the grocery store and charge while they're there at the mall, you know, whatever it might be. So it'll be interesting to see what Volvo does. But again, I'll say more choice in the EV space is better.
Yeah, agreed. Well, when we come back, we're going to be road testing some very interesting vehicles that are both contenders for Utility of the Year, North American Utility of the Year, the Land Rover Defender and the Genesis GV80. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. It's Jack Nerad back with you, along with Chris Teague, and we thank him so very much for being with us. And he was driving a very zooty car from Great Britain, the Land Rover Defender, a vaunted name, a name that brings back a lot of fond memories to a lot of people. Tell us about the new Defender, would you, Chris?
Absolutely. I was driving the Defender 110, which is the four-door model that came out first. They are now rolling out the Defender 90, which is what a lot of people probably remember. It looks a little bit like a Jeep Wrangler two-door. However, the new model looks nothing like a Jeep Wrangler. It's very refined. It still has the signature sort of boxy look to it. In fact, the back of the vehicle actually has some right angles where the sheet metal meets. It's very, very clever. But the Defender comes standard with a four-cylinder engine with an 8-speed automatic transmission. That's a turbocharged 4. My test car had a 3-liter inline 6 that was turbocharged and electrically supercharged. It also had a 48-volt hybrid system, just to make things a little bit more complicated. That engine slaps out 395 horsepower to all four wheels. It's very powerful. I know some people will, you know, complain that it's not fast, but there's more than enough power to get up a hill or get on the highway and merge and pass. So no complaints there at all. One of the things that surprised me the most, and I think a lot of owners would probably be surprised at this as well. So you're buying a big burly off-roader, and then you get in and the cabin is serene. It's nicely finished. It's well put together. It has a lot of clever storage space, a large infotainment screen. Everything is comfortable. The cabin is very quiet inside. The driving position is great. I'm 6 feet tall, and I was able to get my low driving position the way that I love it and still have enough room behind me for my kids and their large car seats.
Can you see out the windshield as you're low like that, or no problem with that?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good.
And the optional panoramic sunroof made things very bright and airy inside. So overall, it's just a very nice, well put together cabin. Totally unexpected in a vehicle that is so vaunted for its, or so so praised for its off-road abilities. Plenty of storage in the back. There is a third row. However, it is likely only to be used for small trips and for small people. So other than that, with the back row folded down, there's plenty of cargo space. I had enough room for my dog and a couple of suitcases, and he was not being crushed or bumped into at all, which he was very happy about. So in terms of off-road ability, I know a lot of people will love to buy these things and keep them on pavement, but you're really missing out if you do that. A friend of mine owns an apple orchard, and we waited for a nice rainy day, and we hit the muddy hills, and the Defender climbs right up. It's just like a mountain goat or whatever the goats are that can kind of stand right on the edge of a mountain. It's very sure-footed, even comfortable off-road, not too jarring and shaky. The air suspension does its job. So all around, I think, you know, it's expensive. My test vehicle is around $70,000, but you get what you pay for. And this is, you know, an excellent example of the melding of a high-end vehicle and an off-road vehicle that doesn't sacrifice too much on either end to make it happen.
Right. And I think you point out something that's very important with Land Rover, and they're really most at home off-road. And the fact that they're used as a tall and very expensive station wagon in a lot of suburbs around the country is true, but it doesn't really capture what the vehicle was designed to do and what the capabilities that it has. And so I think you did the right thing by testing it in that kind of situation. And they really stand out in those kind of things. So that's much appreciated.
Yeah, and you know, I think the 2020 Defender racked up, you know, more awards than I think anybody ever expected to. And it really is just that ability to be, it's comfortable and sure-footed no matter where you are. And I think that is a huge, huge thing.
I think if there's any criticism of it, it could be that it seems too refined and pristine that you don't want to get it dirty. I mean, and you don't want to get it dirty inside and out. And, you know, maybe it needs to be a little rougher in some ways, or, you know, we need to see a version of it that is a little more, you know, gung-ho that way, as opposed to so refined.
Yeah, you know, they mix it up. We had rubber floor mats and leather seats. So, you know, it's where the worlds collide.
Right, right. Well, I was driving another contender for North American Utility of the Year. It is the Genesis GV80. Very important vehicle for Genesis because they launched into the luxury segment without an SUV, just as the SUV market and the luxury market was turning to SUVs in the biggest possible way. So they were kind of out of luck just selling sedans, very nice sedans, as a matter of fact, in a market that had turned to SUVs. So this is an important vehicle for them to get it right. It is a mid-size luxury SUV, and I think they've got it right in a lot of ways, certainly from a styling point of view. The family and I went to a thing up, actually at Dodger Stadium last night, and somebody driving near us ground down their window and just told us how much they loved the look of the vehicle. So I guess that's getting it right. You don't see that every day. It's a good-looking vehicle with an interesting light pattern up front. It looks substantial. You don't necessarily peg it as being a Korean vehicle. It just looks like a nice internationally styled crossover, rear drive platform, so that's good. Very comfortable inside, very well finished, kind of aesthetically, I wouldn't say plain so much as spare in a good way. They talk about the luxury of white space when they talk about the interior, and I think there's something to that. It's just, it's not over gimmicked up with a lot of frills and Phillips and those kind of things. Has a massive split-screen infotainment display, and I'll go into that a little later, maybe, because when I get to gripes. But I did enjoy the fact that it has a big display. As I mentioned, this is a rear-drive platform, and there are two engines available, the 2.5-liter turbocharged inline four-cylinder engine that produces 300 horsepower. And I drove a vehicle so equipped, and it was very, very nice. And then switched into the one with the 3.5-liter twin-turbo V6, 375 horsepower. That's better, certainly. We always like more horsepower, and you don't give up much in the way of fuel economy for that added horsepower. Both are very acceptable. I think anybody in this market would probably be just fine with either of them. And of course, they have a very sophisticated all-wheel drive system as well. Now I'll dive into the gripe department a little bit. In driving the G80, the sedan version of this vehicle, the infotainment system was extremely easy to use. No problems whatsoever. In this particular vehicle, and I've gone through a lot of entertainment systems, over the years. This was almost unfathomable to me. It was a touch screen, but then it had a controller on the console, but it was unclear how that actually worked, how it actually connected up. You could kind of go through some of the menus with that or some of the icons with that. But then selecting them was a bit difficult. It got to where I really resorted to voice command, always iffy, as the most reliable way to do something as simple as tuning a radio station. And I don't want to color the review of this very, very nice vehicle. I mean, it's certainly extremely nice just to be nominated for Utility of the Year by the North American Car of the Year jury is a strong endorsement. There's a lot to like about this vehicle. It's just the infotainment system was, to me, almost unfathomable. And I'm kind of at a loss to why they didn't use the exact same system that's in the sedan. And they didn't. I mean, it is different. Different enough to be confusing in any case. But in terms of comfort, power, in style, value, it is all there in the GV80, and I think maybe you can come to terms with the infotainment system. It also did one other odd thing during my test period. The lumbar support is inflatable, and for some reason, as I was driving back from Dodger Stadium last night, it decided to inflate and then deflate. Inflate and deflate. It was not precisely massage, and I don't think there's a massage function. Kind of was, but just this little odd thing that it did. So overall, don't let those little niggling problems turn you off to the GV80 from Genesis. It's really a very good vehicle and absolutely worthy of consideration in that set. But just a couple odd things threw me off a bit.
Yeah, I love throwing praise at Genesis. I think they've done a great job with their latest crop of vehicles. I have not driven the GV80, but compare it to the G80, they do a really good job with that sort of austere cabin where it doesn't feel bare, but there's a lot of, like you said, white space, and they're just beautiful. They work really well. And, I hate to hear your frustration with the infotainment system, because I love to also, give praise to Hyundai and Genesis for the simplicity of their system. But the control dials combined with touchscreen, so the physical versus virtual sort of touch interface can be confusing. And I think over time people probably get used to it. But for us, you kind of have to take that into mind, because you're sitting in the vehicle for a few days or a week and it's frustrating. But that's a problem in a few other vehicles too, so it's not unique to Genesis.
Well, and the thing that was interesting to me, and I've never experienced this, and this was unique to Genesis, is it didn't seem to operate the same way each time I used it. Like, I thought I was doing the same things and I got different results. And, suddenly Sirius satellite radio just disappeared from the menu for a while. And it took me actually using a voice command to get it to show back up on the menu. It was really baffling. I mean, I kind of know how computers work, and this computerized stuff works. And that just seems, I scratch my head trying to figure out how that could even happen.
Yeah, hopefully they get that ironed out in the next couple of years here, because it is a great overall vehicle.
Absolutely true. And so we have two great overall vehicles, I think. The Land Rover Defender, we certainly defend its honor and like that very much. And we think that mostly the Genesis GV80 is a home run and going to be a big success for Genesis and kind of really put them on the map where they deserve to be in the luxury segment and certainly in the value portion of that luxury segment. So two very good vehicles this time around. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Laura Thornton of OnStar. She has a way to follow the journey of someone very special this Christmas on this Christmas Eve show. So this will be very apropos. And if you're listening to the show after Christmas, well, you're way ahead for next Christmas, because I bet they're going to do the same thing next Christmas, too. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. Thank you so much for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you, and we have a very special guest, and I mean special, special. And she has a hotline to somebody who is very special as well. Her name is Laura Thornton. She is with OnStar. And Laura, tell us what your special assignment is this week.
Wow, that's very interesting of you to ask. We've got a great opportunity to get the hotline direct to where Santa's location is next week. So for our 10th year, OnStar is partnering with the North American Aerospace Defense Command, more commonly known as NORAD, to provide our customers with real-time updates on Santa's flight status using their official Santa location data.
And it's so super cool. And my name happens to be NERAD, which is very close to NORAD, but I'm not related to NORAD. But tell our listeners how you've got together with NORAD to put all this together.
Absolutely. It's been a number of years now that we've worked together. We saw this as an opportunity about 10 years ago to just leverage our service to create some joy and magic in the season. Our service is so easy to use and it's location-based, and we saw a great alignment with what NORAD does and a great way to deliver some magic to our customers real time.
Well, I tell our listeners how they can tap into this magic, because, you know, so many people have that OnStar button in their car, and let them know how they can do this.
Sure. All you have to do is hop in your sleigh. So as long as you have a Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, or Cadillac vehicle equipped with OnStar, you can push your blue button and one of our friendly advisors will be there to help you check his location and tell you where he's at.
And how do you know where he is?
We have a direct line, so our advisors can see right then and there from NORAD's database where he's located.
Ah, so you can see at all times. Mm-hmm. And when can people begin to do this, and when does it end? I can kind of guess, but...
as soon as he leaves the North Pole, we are able to track him. So 6 p.m. on December 24th, all the way through to 5 a.m. on December 25th.
So the hot ticket is to get in your General Motors car or any car equipped with OnStar, right? And then push the button. And once they push the button, what do they need to do?
Nothing. Just ask the OnStar advisors, let them know what you're calling in for, and he or she will be able to help you out.
Like if you don't have a current OnStar subscription, can you still do this, Laura?
If you do need to have an OnStar subscription, but if you do push your button in, we will be more than happy to help.
Well, let's talk a little bit about OnStar, because certainly you have a lot of services beyond tracking Santa. It is an important one, of course, to track Santa, but what are some of the other things and what's new at OnStar?
Absolutely. So we've been doing this for over 25 years, starting next year. There are traditional features that we're known for. So automatic help and crash, roadside assistance, turn-by-turn navigation, crisis support. So if you are in need of help in a disaster area, we will help you out. But new this year and a really exciting addition to our product portfolio is the OnStar Guardian app, which allows you to take OnStar in the palm of your hand through a smartphone app that we created and actually leverage it for support in any vehicle or non-vehicle situation. If you need help, there's a button you can press and you'll get directly connected to an OnStar advisor.
And what are some of the services that would offer?
Yeah, so that offers mobile crash response, emergency calling, and roadside assistance, as well as location sharing with your family members. You can add up to 7 additional family members, and you can, on a map, see exactly where they're located, get alerts as to where they're going and what they're doing, and a whole bunch of innovations coming in that space as we go into next year as well.
If some people have let their OnStar subscription lapse, how do they re-up? How do they re-sign up?
It's as easy as pushing that button, and one of our sales advisors will get you reset up.
And do you have different tiers of service these days?
We have one OnStar offering that exists, and then we have some accompanying offerings that support more of the connected vehicle services in the vehicle. So if you think about that as your remote services allowing you to command your vehicle, Wi-Fi hotspot in the car, and other data-related products that help support your apps and your vehicle as well. So those other tiered products are not OnStar related. They can be bundled together, though, as a nice subscription offering.
Got it. And getting back to Santa, do you have any stories for us about kids who have pushed the OnStar button and then reached Santa? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, I can share my own story. So I have a 6 and an 8-year-old, and last year we drove around, we pushed in a few times, and one of the locations, we just didn't even know where it was on the map. It was somewhere in, I think, Chile, and we went home and used it as an opportunity to learn a bit more about the geography and where he was. So it's a really cool experience to connect not only with where Santa is, but to potentially even use as a learning experience.
Got it. Just regular people are welcome to press the button more than once to track Santa during this whole time.
Yes, I consider myself a regular person too. And yes, you can push your button as many times as you'd like during this window of time.
Well, you're a very special person, including your relationship with Santa Claus, of course, and with OnStar.
Yes.
So remind our listeners one more time how they can go about doing this and getting in touch with Santa and then when that exists.
Okay, so between December 24th and December 25th, as soon as Santa sets off on his journey, all you have to do is hop in the sleigh of your Chevy, Buick, GMC, or Cadillac and push your blue OnStar button. One of our advisors will be able to check on Santa's status, location, and let you know right then and there.
Well, Laura Thornton, a Santa's helper, in addition to working for OnStar, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it as well.
Merry Christmas to you and to your family, and Merry Christmas to all the folks at OnStar.
You too. Thank you, Jack.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Well, that was our special interview with Laura Thornton of OnStar, tracking, well, I guess we all know now, we're tracking Santa Claus and his trip around the world. He goes really fast. It's just kind of incredible. And an outlet that's kind of like mine, or kind of like my last name. My last name is NRAD. It is NORAD. Actually tracks him during his travels. So, and OnStar clues into that. And coming up, we're going to be talking with Lev Peeker. He's the CEO of CarParts.com. Chris, do you do any do-it-yourself car work or buy car parts online or from a car parts supplier?
I do. We don't have a lot of room here in our driveway, but I do some basic stuff, change the oil. I did the brakes on my wife's car a couple of years ago. So, yeah, we definitely do. And I have a few sites that I pick up as my favorite.
Ah, well, very cool. Well, Lev Peeker of CarParts.com will be telling us how he has revamped their operation and what they offer. And pretty interesting stuff. I had a chance to sit down with him recently. So that's coming up. So stay with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack NRAD back with you, and thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it. You're the reason that we do what we do, so we appreciate you being with us. We have a great guest for you. His name is Lev Peeker. He is the CEO of CarParts.com, and I think this is an apropos time to talk to him. Lev, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell our listeners what CarParts.com is all about, and then we can dive into what the last several months have brought our way.
Absolutely. So CarParts.com is a direct-to-consumer business. We sell aftermarket parts of all kinds, so everything from a spark plug to a hood. And we source our products directly from the same factories where premium brands are sourcing theirs. So our shocks and struts are coming from the same place where Monroe sources theirs. And then we sell it straight to the customer, allowing us to cut out a lot of the middleman and pass on the savings to the consumer.
Well, the whole car parts business is a massive one, number one. And it has to have been changed by COVID-19, like so many things have changed. And I can look at, you know, two ways it might have changed, right? One is people are driving a lot less. Maybe that's bad for your business. On the other hand, people are have a lot of time on their hands, and they're not flush with money these days. So maybe that's really good for your business. Which of those, or maybe both, are describe what's going on with you right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what we've seen with COVID-19 is we've seen an acceleration of three broad trends. The first one is a shift from do it for me to do it yourself. And usually we see it when people are trying to save money. They try to do the repairs themselves instead of taking it to a shop. And with repair being demystified by different tools like YouTube or different forums where you can go and find, you know, a ton of information about how to fix your vehicle, you can save significant amounts of money by doing the repair yourself. And most of the repairs and most of the parts we sell, it's actually not that complicated. The second trend that we've seen play out is a shift from offline to online. And we've seen it across other industries. But what's interesting about auto parts is that prior to the pandemic, the online penetration was extremely low, 3 to 5%. And so the customer would go to an AutoZone or an Advance. Usually those stores inside the 10,000 square feet, they don't carry fit-specific parts, and so they would have to ship it to the customer anyways. And so what we've seen through the pandemic is that there has been a shift from kind of how the customers were shopping before, and now they're discovering new ways of shopping, and it's more convenient, and it's also a lot cheaper. So a lot of customers are migrating from offline to online. And the last trend that we've seen is that there is less interest in public transportation. So people obviously don't want to get on planes or buses or trains, and a shift towards more personal mobility. Now, you're right in the fact that miles driven have a direct correlation to how many auto parts are sold, because the more you drive, the more stuff breaks down, the more maintenance you need. But what we've seen is that even though miles driven are down about 12% to pre-pandemic levels right now, we're still seeing the other two trends playing out and driving our business forward. And so we've seen fantastic results. Our sales were up pre-pandemic about 40%. They're up 70% now. We're growing extremely fast, but it's those three trends. And we'll continue to kind of see that play out. I don't think we see, you know, any retracing once the country opens up. If anything, we'll see more miles driven, which means more maintenance and more repair.
It seems like we're seeing an explosion of car parts. I mean, just individual parts, right? I mean, it's my sense is that there's more and more specific parts for specific vehicles. You know, I go back to a day where you could go to an auto parts store. They would carry a lot of stuff. You would walk away with the part you needed, and off you go. But it just can't be that way these days based on the individualization, if you will, of parts. You want to comment on that? Am I kind of getting that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So if you think about like one vehicle, like let's say it's a Ford F-150. Well, the Ford F-150 comes in like 50 different configurations. There's you know, different engine sizes that you can put in there, different bed lengths. You can get a crew cab or standard cab. So there's a ton of different configurations that you can get one vehicle in. And if you think about that and apply it at a broader scale, like, you know, BMW has, I don't know, 20 or 30 different models, and each model has, you know, tens or hundreds of configurations you can make. It adds up to the market having to carry a ton of parts. I think right now the estimate is the total market is about 25 million different unique SKUs. And so that's a lot to carry for any company.
Yeah, that's a SKU is a stock keeping unit, an individual part, right? An individual part, a distinct part.
Yes, correct. And so, you know, if you kind of think about that and think about the scale, that's why the market is so enormous. You know, our market is $500 billion in the U.S. alone. And it is because of what you just described. That's, you know, every vehicle can be configured to however the customer chooses, and that results in kind of a ton of different parts that a company has to carry.
So how quickly can you get the part to the typical customer? They order online from you at carparts.com. How quickly can it be in their hands?
So today we're at 2 to 3 days to deliver a part to a customer. Our goal is to get to 90% of consumers in 1 day. And the reason for that is because what we sell is a need-based product. So a customer has a problem where the car doesn't start, or you know, they were backing out of their driveway and they took off a mirror. You know, there is a number of problems we're trying to solve. And so there is an immediacy to what the customer is trying to achieve. They want to get back on the road. So for us, we're trying to solve that problem of the customer wanting to get back on the road quickly. So our goal is to get to 90% of consumers within 1 day. And we think we can get there in probably 2 years or so. Right now, we cover about 60% of the country in 1 day. But within the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to get to 90% in 1 day.
Do you have multiple warehouses across the country? Or are you servicing from one warehouse space? How do you do that?
So we have 5 warehouses today. We have one in Las Vegas that services the West Coast. We have one in Virginia that services the Northeast. We have one in Illinois that's primarily for the middle of the country. And we just opened a DC in Texas that's going to serve primarily the Texas and the Oklahoma market, which is one of our bigger markets.
Mm-hmm. And do they go out by an overnight shipper, you know, a FedEx or DHL or something like that? Is that typically how you ship?
That's correct. So either a regional carrier, FedEx, or in cases of large parts like hoods or bumper covers, that have to go LTL, then we'll do it by truck freight as well.
Got it. And that's an issue, isn't it? That you have parts that can be absolutely tiny. I mean, you can hold in the palm of your hand, and other parts are substantial in size, dimensions, and weight, right?
Yeah, so it's a very unique problem that we're solving. And it's part of the reason why, you know, companies like Amazon can't really do this really well. So our supply chain is built to handle everything from a spark plug to a large hood. And the demand is really spread out across a lot of different SKUs. So it's a very long tail business. Demand is not concentrated in one or two SKUs. So, you know, our supply chain is built for it. We've been doing this for a long time. And so we solve a very unique problem in the market.
Are you marketing and selling to independent shops, even dealerships, in addition to consumers, or are you concentrating almost entirely on consumers?
So right now we're mostly focused on the DIY customer. Between 20 and 25% of our customers do buy the parts from us and then take it to a shop. So that's actually the fastest growing segment in the market. Is the customer procures the part and then they take it to the shop to get it installed. We have a small wholesale arm of our business. It's about 5%, but that's not the focus of the business. Today we're focused really on solving the problem for the do-it-yourself customer.
What are some logical or typical do-it-yourself projects that you service with your parts from carparts.com?
Yeah, usually it's a lot of replacement parts. So, you know, we're in California, so, you know, you leave your car out in the sun and your headlights yellow out. So replacing headlights, you're backing out of the driveway and you take a mirror off. So replacing mirrors, you try to get in your car and your door handle breaks. So we do door handles. You roll down the window and it doesn't come up anymore. So that's a window regulator. So those are typical, you know, replacement type repairs. And now we're getting into more complicated kind of in the wheelbase maintenance as well as repair items. So we're starting to focus on brakes as well as everything that goes in the wheelbase. So wheel hubs, control arms, and shocks and struts, primarily for the Midwest and the Northeast, because after the winter, you know, there's a lot of potholes. And so people drive around, they hit potholes, and then they have to fix all the damage that's done to the vehicle once the snow has melted. So that's a big part of the business beginning next year.
It's an interesting part of the business too. How do you give consumers the confidence that they can do the job, that they can do the job correctly? Because really safety is hinging on that, right?
Yeah, so two things. One, we guarantee the fitment of the part. And two, what you'll see us roll out over time is chat or talk to a mechanic, where you'll be able to call into our call center and do a video conference with an ASC certified mechanic, and he'll be able to walk you through kind of what needs to be done. It's probably going to come. We're going to pilot the program early next year. And then as we get more comfortable with it, we'll roll it out more broadly.
Yeah, well, that does make sense. So you will have some proprietary video or chat. Are you going to do proprietary video like typical repairs do essentially YouTube-style videos on those repairs? Or are you going to rely more on individual service for that customer?
No, we're going to rely more on that customer being able to call in and actually individually chat with a mechanic. Because the video only solves a part of the problem. You may still encounter other issues once you take a car apart that you didn't anticipate, and you need help from somebody that understands what's going on. So you'll be able to video chat with somebody that knows the cars and will be able to walk you through what needs to be done in a unique situation.
Yeah, well, I think that's actually a good way to do it. My brother is a ASE certified mechanic, has run his own shop for about 40 years, and he has many stories to tell about individual fixes. He's proud of what he's able to do, and it does require an experienced hand to do that. So that's interesting. What do you think are the biggest challenges to the do-it-yourselfer these days in terms of getting a job done on their car?
I think some of the biggest challenges is, you know, it's not getting any simpler to fix cars. And so depending on what type of repair you're trying to do, I think some manufacturers are now making sure that you need specialized tools in order to take something apart. And so I think that's one of the bigger challenges is, you know, as cars become more and more complex, you know, it does make it more interesting to kind of take it apart and see what's in there. But at the same time, if you need specialized tools, you know, how do you procure them? Sometimes only the dealer carries them and you can't get them in the aftermarket. I think that's one of the bigger challenges on a go-forward basis. I think the older vehicles, you know, they're still somewhat simple, I would say, to fix up. But the newer vehicles will present different challenges to the DIY.
Right. Are you looking at maybe a lending program or something like that? I know that some auto parts shops do that on a local basis, with their commercial customers sometimes.
Yeah, we'll evaluate that. I think right now we're focused on providing the entire job to the DIY customer. And what I mean by that is, if you land on our pages, we're going to sell you the tools that you need to do the repair. The lending program, like a pure e-commerce business, it's a little bit more difficult to execute at scale. So for now, I think we're focused on just selling the entire job and making sure that the customer knows what tools they need. And if they choose to buy it from us, great. And if they want to go to AutoZone and lend them, that's great too.
Right, right. What is your pricing like? Do you kind of take a premium thing because you're able to deliver so quickly and deliver the parts that are necessary? Or are you trying to be extremely price competitive with local parts stores? Where do you stand on all that?
So because we source our own product and we put it in our own distribution centers, we're able to pass on a lot of the savings to the customer. Because the typical supply chain, you have a brand that goes to the factory, they bring it in, they then sell it to a warehouse distributor. The warehouse distributor then sells it to a shop, and then the shop then sells it to the customer. So there are four steps in that distribution model. So on average, if you were to compare part to part between us and the brick and mortar, we're probably 40 to 50% cheaper than what you would find inside the store.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, back in the day, it would be valuable to the consumer to get that part that same day, right? Or to get it to the shop and they would get their car fixed that same day. That likely is not going to happen no matter where you're going right now for a lot of parts, it strikes me. So that advantage has gone away for the local business and kind of is in your favor. Am I getting that right?
That's correct. And if you think about, again, the typical brick and mortar store, you know, most of what they carry is not fit specific. It's usually cleaning supplies and chamois and windshield wipers and things like that. It's hard to fit 18 million parts inside 10,000 square foot box. And so what ends up happening usually is, you know, if you need a fit specific part, like a headlight, for example, you'll go in and they'll tell you, well, you know, we can either have it delivered to the store, you know, in 1 or 2 days, or we can ship it to you and it'll take 2 to 3 days. And at that point, there's no advantage of you going to the store. You could have gone on carparts.com on your phone, ordered the part, and had it the next day. So, you know, a lot of that advantage has been taken away. And, you know, online can offer that endless aisle experience where, you know, you have all the parts that you need for your car. So, that advantage is no longer there.
What should I have asked you, Lev, about your business? And what should consumers know that I haven't talked to you about?
I think, we have a great assortment. Our pricing is unbeatable. And, you know, every customer is looking for two things when they shop online. They look for convenience and value. And that's what we're really focused on. So from a convenience perspective, you know, we make it super easy for you to go on your phone, go to carparts.com and buy the parts that you need. Find the right part for your vehicle. We're not going to present you with a list of hundreds and hundreds of different choices. You know, we've reduced the paradox of choice for the customer, and we offer them a similar experience they would have in the store if they were to walk in and ask, what part should I buy? And then from a value perspective, because we are a direct supplier, we go straight to the factory and bring the parts in and sell them directly to the consumer, we're able to offer phenomenal value to the end customer.
Well, terrific. That's, I think, a good way to wrap it up. We've been talking with CarParts.com CEO Lev Peeker. Thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I think we learned a lot. And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Lev Peeker. He's the CEO of CarParts.com. He was named Executive of the Year in the Big Awards for Business. What a cool thing. So congratulations to him for that. And congratulations to Chris Teague for lasting through the end of this show. It hasn't been easy, but thanks so much for doing this on our Christmas Eve show, Chris.
Jack, it was my pleasure. There was no survival here. It was all thriving. I'm very happy to be here. And I hope everyone listening was happy to be here too. And if you like what you heard, please hit the subscribe button and like our podcast and leave us a review. It'll help us continue to grow and get in front of more people and hopefully bring them along for the ride with us as well.
Absolutely. And if you like the show, pass it on to a friend who likes cars or just likes to hear two guys talk, and because that's what we do on this show. Also, I'd like to point out my book, The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. That is available at bookstores wherever you are, including Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I stopped into a Barnes & Noble the other day and picked up a book. So kind of cool to support your local bookstores as well. And look for that book. And look for us next time with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad will be with you for the next edition of America on the Road. Merry Christmas to all of you, and have a happy new year.